The open hand is how I bless the world. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. The open hand is how I bless the world. There's a lot of people that have their fists, you know, in the Third Reich. The mark of the Reich was a closed fist raised up as strength and power, you know, and control. And, you know, this is the hammer of the Third Reich to conquer the world. And the Pope, he doesn't hold his hands out palm upward, he holds his hands palm downward, because he's blessing from himself all the world. Now, how do we hold our hands? How do we hold our hands as we greet the world? Do we sit there, clenched fists against our stomach? No, they're not going to touch me. Or do we have our palms just gently open, sitting on the arm of the chair or something like that? Or do we have one hand under the chin, provocatively thinking something great and deep thoughts? Or do we have scratching the ear, or scratching the top of the head, or putting the finger between the eyes, as Ellen suggests? How do we approach the world? Body language is quite important, and the body language of our hands is a whole course in itself, totally in itself. If we watch another person and we see how their hands are, we know what their emotional, mental, social, spiritual, physical makeup is all about. Really, you can tell them? Well, some people read the palms of people's hands, and they can tell a lot of things. And these are all very wonderful things, but they are too easily misconstrued and misunderstood. You go into the doctor's office, and people are gripping the edge of their chairs. Their hands are white. The fingers and knuckles are white. They're holding the edge of the chair. They're getting ready to go into the doctor. For instance, the dentist. He's got a drill on me. He's got a drill on my teeth. And the doctor gives you Novocaine, so you don't really feel it at all. And you just don't think about it. Now, what are those people doing? They're telescoping their expectation. They're expecting to experience some hurt, you know, fear they've got already. They've already got all the fear, they've already got all the anxiety. But if you were to go into the doctor's office and not know it's a doctor's office, for instance, you were going to go into the beautician shop, you know, and so you opened the wrong door and you walked in, it was the dentist's office, but you didn't know that, and you saw all these people sitting there grimacing, you know, and holding their hands so tight, you say, what kind of a beautician is this? You know? It scares the liver out of people before they even get there. And I surely must be in the wrong place. Whose office is it? It's Dr. D.D., Dr. of Dentistry. You know? And, and so you go into the beautician's shop, and everyone is sitting there listening to lovely music, and they're just sort of zonked out on good meditations and good things, and they go into the beautician, and she does her magic on them, and they come out looking like something that they never dreamed they could be. You know? But you see, you can't take things by the appearances, because you look at the appearances, and maybe the appearance is based upon a totally different joy or fear. Button loves to go to town, and loves to go to town. They love to ride in the car. But the minute they get near the veterinarian's office, they are a little leery, because they know they get shots there, and they get other things, and then they know there's a, you see, it's not them that is the problem, it is them, but it's they go in there and they feel the vibrations of dogs who came there needing immediate surgery and needing immediate help. They were hurting, and that pain vibration in the office is so prevalent. Now, it all depends on what girl is on duty. If one girl is on duty, she will say, oh, everything's okay now, you're all right, and the dog calms down. Another girl is on duty, oh, this is serious, we got to get the dog, and, you know, up goes the vibrations of, you know, unhappiness and pain, and she thinks she's doing a proper job, you know, but she doesn't realize the nurse's first responsibility to the patient is to make them feel at ease, to make them no longer feel. I walked the path from my hermitage up here to the monastery, up here on top of the mountain to the monastery, from the valley in the hermitage. And it really isn't that severe, but it's a steep walk. Well, this morning, I put Rex on a long leash, and I called him back to me two or three times, you know. I said, Rex, come, and he came. And I must do a little more training with him in that direction. Well, I walked up, and I got to the top of the hill, and I did it again. And then I had forgotten all about that climbing that hill makes you a little bit breathless, you know. You come up that hill. I was so busy with something else on my mind. It said to me, boy, oh boy, oh boy, you know, why give your mind to the feeling of it's a tall climb coming up that hill? You know, I just finished the 3-mile walk around the property, and then I was ready to come over here for breakfast. Now, people, they get all upset about those things. I love to walk the 3 miles. I love to walk whenever I can. I love to walk. I love to do all these great things. But the thing is, I was talking with our handyman, and he says, what? You walk all around this property every day a couple times? Yep. He said, oh, that'd kill me. Well, here he is, but 23 bread. He's 24, huh?
He's 40.
40? Still a young man. I'm double him. But he's 40 years old, and he's fat, and he's out of shape, and he does all sorts. He came here one day, and he did a good day's work. He was very busy. I don't remember what he was doing, painting or something perhaps, or taking the paint off a building. And he did a good day's work. But at the end of the day, he said, oh, I'm dead, you know. And the next day, he had to stay home. He was so beat because he was not used to working. Well, after a few days of working and doing the things that we have for him to do around here, he was in perfect shape, you know. Then he blamed it on his girlfriend that he wasn't able to be here. But, you see, all of those things, they're all just in the mind. They're all just in our thinking. Now, why was he any better a few days later after having worked a few days of good outside work? Why was he in better condition? Now you say, well, his muscles were toned up, and he was not. Your muscles are never in tone or out. Your mind is harmonious with it. You have stopped thinking it's a lot of work. You have stopped thinking that it's a big bother. You have stopped thinking that the whole thing is the trouble. You know what I mean? You stop thinking that. And when you stop thinking that, what did I say? I climbed up this hill, and I was so busy with Rex on the leash, calling him back to me, and then letting him go, and calling him back, and letting him go. I didn't realize I climbed the hill. And I didn't realize that I should be puffing like I do when I'm climbing the hill, and have nothing else on my mind but to climb the hill. So, as I was walking along the far end of the path out here, I was singing some of the old Christian songs that I used to know. And I was thinking, I don't want that one. So I changed it, you know. I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses. And I sang that with our version. And I just had a joyous time as I was walking along, just going. And that's a climb, too, on that end. But you don't realize it. It's such a steady, long climb. And I got up at the top of the hill, and I looked back, and I didn't see Rex. He was missing. He went into the bushes at the bottom of the hill. Hadn't seen him since. And went up to the top of the next little hill, looked back, and I could see the beginning of the road. And there he was, a little speck coming out of the bushes, you know, getting ready to come up this way. And I called to him to let him know that I was there. But I knew he had something. He had a rabbit in his mouth. But he came up. Now, you see, what sort of body language was he giving me? You see, he knew that little rabbit was in trouble. And he took that rabbit away from the rest of his family. He didn't want the rabbit to infest the rest of the family with the bugs that he had. But he carried him in his mouth. And so I said, come here. And he came. I said, sit him down. And he set the rabbit down. And it was still alive, but it was not in good condition. It had problems. So, you see, we say here, the open hand shows how we bless our world. Now, I just say, with my open hand directs, no, no more cookies, you know. Or I say, with the open hand down, come Rex, come baby, you know. And sometimes he comes, you know, and I want him to come always. And so I say to you girls too, I say, Sylvia, please come here. And Sylvia says, well, I'm right in the middle of frying your egg. You know, if I don't stay with your egg, it'll burn. I said, Sylvia, come here. Sylvia, did you turn the heat on under the pan? Oh, I forgot. You know, and so, you see, she thinks that she should, you know, say, I'm frying your eggs and they'll burn and this and that and the other. And I wanted to tell her this because I knew that. And she was standing there and just waiting for the egg to do its normal thing and not thinking a thing about it and not thinking why it took so long because she just put it in there, you know. But she didn't notice that the burner was not on. Now, if Sylvia had argued with me and said, just a minute, I can't come now. I'm working on this. I'm doing this. You know, she would have stood there all morning. But when you come, when you're called or someone calls you, and you immediately respond to it, like when I say to Rex, Rex, drop it, whatever he was holding in his mouth, then he drops it. He's getting pretty good at that. A little bit better every day. But the thing is, how do we hold our hands? How do we hold our voices? How do we hold our posture? How do we hold anything that we do? What are we doing, and how are we using this as a matter of sharing? Think once how you share. Do you first build up an explosion inside of yourself and say, come here, and you're ready to blow your top? You know, it comes true, even with the most gentle way of saying, come here. You feel the explosion going on inside, and you're very cautious about coming there. So, how we hold our hand, how we hold our voice, how we hold our posture, they're all very important. And how can we hold it in a very loving way? We hold it in a very loving way if we're unconditional. If we're unconditional, we don't want something from the other person. You say, well, I call them. No, you don't have to call them. Bless them. Bless them. You can do anything you want to do yourself. You don't have to call anyone to do anything. Now, I call to Sylvia, and I say, Sylvia, are you making the eggs? And Sylvia says, yes. And I said, I'll have two. Now, if I'd call Sylvia, and I say, are you making the eggs? And Sylvia would say, no, I'm washing the socks, you know. And I'd say, well, thank you. And so I'd go make my eggs, you understand? Then I would know, and I would know exactly where I stood, and I'd know what had to be done, and I'd be happy about it. So we want to know how we hold our voice, how we hold our hands, how we hold our posture, what sort of an expectation we have from the world. So think on these things. They are kind of fun, they're kind of demanding, but they're always very interesting. I love you. I love you.
I love you.